Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host, and I was watching The Real Housewives the other day, and everyone kept saying, "That's my truth." And I was, yeah, I watch The Real Housewives, of course. Everybody does, right? Because it comes on before Bahamas Life, which is the greatest show on TV. And that's my truth, and I'm sticking to it. And I'm thinking, oh, I'm so glad Carlo is not watching this with me. First of all, he's not going to watch The Real Housewives with me. But
can't go there, my friend.
There's no way he would put up with that. He would just not put up with my truth, your truth. As a matter of fact, he made a video called Your Truth, My Truth, How to Understand and Refute Relativistic Thinking. And that's what we're going to talk about today, relativism. Carlo is an apologist here at Catholic Answers and a great speaker and a wonderful person. And he's got a whole bunch of great books, including the new one on purgatory. Purgatory is for real. But he wrote Prepare the Way. He wrote Meeting the Protestant Challenge. Now coming out soon, Protestantism is for real, but we're going to focus on
the... Do what?
What? No, purgatory is for real.
Oh my God. Protestantism is real.
I'm so embarrassed. I don't know where that came from. I think in my mind, these things were put close together.
Because the two words each start with the letter P.
Right,
so
right.
And that's understandable.
You know, and all Protestants are going to purgatory. No, I shouldn't have said that. Sorry. I don't know why I did that. I apologize, Carlo. But Purgatory is for real, of course, the new book. But we're going to talk about relativism. And this is the real poison in a lot of ways.
This is
the thing that is poisoning us as a society, as a culture. So much so that if you say basic things like that's true, that's not. Well, that's my truth. Okay, well, I understand that whatever that's your truth means, but here's what's true. No, that's forbidden in many places.
Correct.
Certainly forbidden on the Housewives.
That behavior is immoral.
Oh, forget it.
Right.
Right. So one of the ways that you talk about relativism, and we've talked about this before, but I want you to kind of set the stage for people because maybe they'll want to call because they fit into one of these categories. You've kind of given three different ways in which this poison of relativism
manifests.
Served. Yeah. Let me give the number 888-318-7884. If you want to talk about responding to relativism, this is your hour, 888-318-7884. So give me the three kind of techniques of relativism or the modes.
Right. Yeah. So the theme for our show today is refuting arguments for or in favor of relativism. So because often we find ourselves not necessarily having to go on the offensive to establish truth, we often find ourselves immediately on the defensive because we're hit with some slogans, right, or catchphrases in our culture with regard to truth and morality. And like you said, I'm sure this is not exhaustive, but there seems to be three categories that we can sort of group the common challenges that we get from the relativistic thinking in our culture. The first category are arguments for relativism, like somebody might put forward an argument to try and show that there is no objective truth, right? And so, for example, you have the differing beliefs argument. How can there be objective truth when people believe so many different things? So the idea is that because people have so many different opinions and beliefs, therefore, there is no objective truth. So we're often hit with that. And this is common, and I'm sympathetic to it, right? Because whenever you sort of get out the four walls of your home and you go to college or you go travel across the world, you encounter people who believe different than what you were raised with, right? And so for some who aren't intellectually trained, that may lead them to think, oh my gosh, there really is no objective truth. Because if there were, then everybody would believe it, right? And everybody would know it.
Yeah.
Since everybody doesn't, well, I guess there's no objective truth. So that's one argument. You also have the cultural conditioning argument, and that's just simply an assertion. We are culturally conditioned to believe what we believe, therefore there is no objective truth. So these are some arguments for relativism, but there are some other arguments that aren't necessarily put forward to prove relativism or to prove that there is no objective truth. Right?
Yeah.
But some are just to stop interference, right? So they just don't want you messing around with people's business and getting involved in people's lives and stuff. So it might come across like that you shouldn't judge anybody's belief or behavior to be false or immoral, right? So it's the thy shall not judge argument. You know, just don't, we shouldn't be going around judging people's beliefs and behaviors, or the thy shall not impose argument, right? We shouldn't go around imposing our beliefs upon others. Just let them be, right? So as Shazam says in that comic book movie, you do you. Of course, that's the popular slogan that we find within our culture, but it found right. itself in the that show Shazam. I don't know if you're familiar with it.
But are you kidding? I was probably the first one who saw it.
Yeah. So like Shazam's like, you do you, right? And, yeah. and that's a common slogan that people really buy into. So it's, the idea is, you know, we shouldn't be messing around with people's beliefs and caring about what they do or don't do, whether it's moral or immoral. Now, there's another category of arguments, and these are arguments that are put forward simply to just shut down the rational discussion,
yeah.
right? And so you might categorize these arguments as like mean-spirited arguments, or you're being mean-spirited. And they manifest themselves in a variety of ways. So you have like the hate speech argument, right? So to yeah. say that someone's belief is false or someone's behavior is immoral, that's hate speech, right? Or it might be you're being a bigot if you say that person's behavior is immoral. You're just guilty of bigotry. Or you're being intolerant to say that person's behavior is immoral or that person's belief is false, right? You're not tolerating their belief. You're not tolerating their behavior, and so thus you're being intolerant, right? Or you're just being judgmental. Stop being so judgmental, right, in judging a person's belief to be wrong. But when you look at these sorts of arguments, when we analyze them and we push through them and sift through them, what we see is just all these boil down to one. You're just mean-spirited, right? You're just being mean-spirited in opposing someone's belief or opposing someone's behavior and having a different opinion on the matter. And so these are the sort of the three major categories
yeah.
that we find arguments in favor of relativism taking the form of. And it's important that we think through them and learn how to respond to them clearly and charitably, and to try to help people see that these arguments in no way or are justifying or leading us in the direction of relativism and showing that relativism is the way to go. In fact, there is objective truth, and that's the way to go. And we need to conform our lives to it. But that, of course, that's the topic for today's show, and hopefully we get some callers in. Maybe they're hearing these things in the workplace or at home. And also, too, Cy, relativism is not just something out there in the secular world. I would argue...
I know where you're going.
That
yeah.
That is actually...
It's gotten into our church.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Even within the Catholic Church itself, you know, at least with some of our pastors and our leaders who might embrace a form of relativism, but also in general within Christianity and the Catholic yeah. Protestant conversations. Very often when you're having a conversation with a Protestant, you'll hear things like, well, yeah, we differ on some theological or doctrinal issue, but that really doesn't matter. I mean, we're all Christian. We're united in our belief in Jesus Christ, which is true, right? Mm-hmm. We're united in our belief in Jesus Christ. But there's a tendency to downplay the doctrinal differences as if they don't matter. So it's this sort of, yes. we're all the same within Christianity. There's really no essential differences, and so we don't have to really worry about those doctrinal differences. And so it's a form of Christian relativism, relativism within Christianity itself. And so that's something that's on the table for us to talk about today as well.
888-318-7884, the number. We're talking relativism, whether it's a concern that you have. Maybe perhaps you do believe in some of these relativistic arguments that Carlo has made, and you want to defend them, or you want to at least challenge Carlo on what he said, or maybe... And I do think this is quite common. There's somebody that's very important to us that we love in our life who is committed to these, and we'd like to some way of breaking through some of this relativism to say, no, there is a truth that you can center your life on. You're welcome to call 888-318-7884, 888-31-TRUTH. In addition, I want to let you know before we go to the break that Carlo is continuing with his 8-week online study with the St. Philip Institute. Classes began on Monday, September 14th, but you can still register and catch up by watching the previous two lessons. And it's a great, great way to learn how to defend the faith. You can join the class as a person asking questions, or you can just audit the class. class, and that will set you back a little less in the wallet, but and just audit, enjoy it. Go head over to stphilipinstitute.org/events for all the information. stphilipinstitute.org/events. It's going well?
Yes, it's going well. We've gone through 2 weeks so far, so we have 6 weeks to go. And the first 2 weeks were great, man. The people there are enjoying it. I'm having a good time. I'm liking it. It's awesome. Yeah, and thanks to Stacy Trusenkos and the St. Philip Institute, and I just look forward to doing it again on Monday night. It's so much fun to do that stuff.
Yeah, and it's a great one for, this anyone in the world can participate in it, but I think it's a great one for this part of Texas because the Catholics are in the minority there. It's mostly evangelical Christians. Did you get any Protestant folks? Because it's Meeting the Protestant Challenge.
Correct. Yeah, we're going through my book, Meeting the Protestant Challenge. We actually had one Protestant who's a part of the webinar, and he's been asking questions. So
great.
It's great because he's the one pushing back. So we have a premium package that you can buy, and you're able to participate in a live discussion and ask questions. So the one Protestant guy in there, he's like, well, I'm the only Protestant here, so I need to be the one pushing back a little bit, which I'm so grateful for. And we've had some very fruitful discussions over the past 2 weeks so far, and I look forward to more fruitful discussions in the remaining weeks.
stphilipinstitute.org/events is where you can find out all about it.
Hang on, we'll be right back with more Catholic Answers Live.
Hi, this is Cy. Catholic Answers Focus is our podcast for deeper dives into individual faith topics. We spend a half hour or so with an expert, apologist, philosopher, or theologian on a single topic. This week, we talk astrology with Father Hugh on Monday's episode. And then on Wednesday, we ask Jimmy Akin to defend belief in the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Catch each episode on YouTube or listen on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcasts, or join us on our website, CatholicAnswersFocus.com.
The Aquinas Writing Advantage Program is part of Homeschool Connections' set of online courses for your Catholic homeschool. Homeschool Connections' website is homeschoolconnections.com.
We pray because we want to come into union with God. He wants to breathe His life into us, and we want to accept that life. Because in accepting that life, we begin to experience the abundance that He has in mind for us to receive. Pray to God. Lift your praises high to God and present to Him every supplication that you might find the grace you need for the present moment that He presents to you. Everything good comes from prayer, says Mother Teresa of Calcutta, and so it is true.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. We're talking relativism with Carla Roussard. You're welcome to call. If you've been to college, for example, this is one place where I guarantee you, you've been exposed to relativism. Even if you've been to a Catholic college, I'll bet you, you've been hit over the head with some relativism. And you've probably run into those professors who have said, you know, people like Carlo are really reactionaries. They don't know. They're not up with the times. They haven't read Jean-Paul Sartre or something like that, whatever the critique is. And by the way, if you haven't read Jean-Paul Sartre, don't bother. It's it's not worth it. Linda in Illinois is first listening to Channel 130, Sirius XM Satellite Radio. That's EWTN on Sirius XM Satellite Radio. Linda, thanks for your call. Your question for Carla.
Hi, Carla. Thanks for taking my call. So my mother-in-law is an agnostic. I've been married for almost 30 years, so I've had this ongoing goal, I guess, in my life to at least become Christian and, you know, ideally become Catholic. But she just seems to be very comfortable and kind of banking on the fact that she thinks, you know, all good people get into heaven type of a thing. And the last conversation I had with her, she doesn't want to commit to any one particular religion. Okay. Because she uses a phrase, she said, all religions are about peace.
Okay.
And I don't think that anybody should judge anybody else, and I just want to live a life of peace and
I see.
Be good enough. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, so you're wondering what might you say in response, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you for your call, Linda. We really appreciate it. Well, you could challenge that assumption and say, well, you know, mother-in-law, not all religions promote peace. And we could articulate differences between certain religions in principle and certain principles that they're founded upon, and identify those principles in other religions and say this religion does not promote peace in this way, and these other religions do. So you could just challenge the assumption, or, Linda, you could grant the assumption just for argument's sake, right? And you could say, okay, well, let's just say that all religions do promote peace, but it doesn't follow from that that all religions are the same. That's just one thing that these religions happen to be right on, namely, we ought to promote peace. And so then the question becomes, well, okay, maybe they all agree on that issue, like we need to promote peace. But then the question becomes, well, where do they differ if they do in fact differ? And that's where the conversation has to go, that there are essential differences between religions, and they claim contradictory things, right? So, for example, Christianity says Jesus is God, but Islam denies the divinity of Jesus. The Jewish faith denies the divinity of Jesus. Those are essential differences there. Jesus either is God or he is not God. So somebody has to be right and somebody's wrong here, right? These are two contradictory propositions. So he's either God or he's not. And so even if we don't know for sure whether he's God or not, at least our intellect is making the judgment like somebody's got to be right here, right? Is either going to be the Christian faith, they're either right or they're wrong in claiming that Jesus is God. So you might point out to your mother-in-law, Linda, that these are essential differences between the religions. So it would be false to say that all religions are the same. Sure, they might be in agreement on some issues, in some truths, and I would argue, especially those truths that we can know by reason alone, right? And certain moral precepts. And so you're going to find commonality among religions, but there are essential differences. And that's what we have to focus on, Linda, and ask the question, is the Christian claim true? Is Jesus God? Because if he is, well, then we ought to live our lives for him. We ought to embrace and accept and assent to that which he taught. Because if he's God, then what he taught is true. And if we want truth in our lives, if we want to be a truthful person and have the truth, then we would embrace that. But of course, that's on condition whether or not Jesus is in fact God. So what do you think of that so far, Linda?
That's very good. I'm going to have to listen to this again.
Yes, just always. You could also ask her, well, you know, mother-in-law, have you actually looked into the claims of Christianity in contrast to what these other religions claim? And I suspect that if she's saying, well, all religions are basically the same, they all promote peace, well, then I suspect she hasn't actually looked into the teachings, right? And the principles that ground the various different religions out there. And if she really is intellectually honest, well, then she's hopefully would respond to the invitation to research those claims. And then she'll come to see that there are essential differences between the two and they're not all the same. And then begin inquiring as to which of these claims are true.
Linda, thanks very, very much. Appreciate the call. We're talking about relativism. Carlo giving arguments for refuting relativism this hour. 888-318-7884.
Yeah, I think it's, Cy, I think it's important to point out here, like, that was a great call from Linda. But what she was, what her mother-in-law was advocating is religious pluralism, right? Which is distinct from relativism, because religious pluralism will assert all religions are the same, right? Okay. And so they all have the truth without recognizing the essential differences. Relativism would be the claim like, yeah, I recognize your belief differs from my belief, but your belief is true for you. My belief, although different than yours, is true for me.
Yeah, I see, right.
So there's a distinction, but within our culture, they're related in as much as what's really undergirding this religious pluralism is this hesitancy or the fear of wanting to say that belief is wrong.
Yes, we don't
My belief is true. And so in that sense,
right.
religious pluralism is related to relativism because many relativists employ that argument in favor of their relativism. Well, I don't want to say your belief is false or your behavior is immoral.
Mm-hmm.
And so in order to avoid that, they'll just appeal to relativism and say, well, your truth is your truth. My truth is my truth.
888-318-7884, the number. George in Des Moines, Iowa, listening on Iowa Catholic Radio, is up next. George, your question for Carlo.
Hello.
Hi, George.
My question is, do you think that faithful Catholics can uphold the principles of truth and, you know, objective truth if one supports the president, Donald Trump, who uses relativism to amass more power for himself? The fact that he says whatever is convenient in the moment constantly, is that a problem? When his campaign advisor said, you know, she started the alternative facts movement of, you know, just saying whatever is convenient in the moment to get ahead, and things like hypocrisy, doublespeak. I've heard it said that it's almost worse than lying. I mean, I don't want to use profanity, but, you know, BS. There's lying, and then there's BS, which is like, it doesn't even matter what's true.
Yeah.
I just need to make you confused and uncertain and just say, well, I didn't say it.
That was actually the title of a very famous philosophy book that came out about 20 years ago, although the name of the book is the full phrase BS written out. And it's about exactly that, about how BSing your way through life is worse than lying, at least this philosopher thought. It's escaping my mind, the name of the philosopher, because it means you just don't care what's true. A liar at least cares about what's true, and in the sense that they're willing to contradict it. A BSer doesn't care. I don't know if that's a strong philosophical argument, but I wonder about this seems difficult, a very difficult question to answer to me. Maybe it doesn't seem like that to you, because not everything that's bad is relativism, and not everything that people might do that's wrong, for example, hypocrisy, is relativism.
Right.
So that's where my difficulty is, and I'm not trying to elide the question.
And I don't think George is maybe trying to equate the two. He's just asking the question. It seems to me, George, that you're asking the question. We have, we'll get to the principle of the matter where we have an individual and a leader who is not perfect, right? And who maybe gets it right and affirms the truth of reality in some aspects and maybe doesn't in other aspects. So let's say if in reality it is the case that an individual is engaging in what you call, like you said, the BS, right? Engaging in saying what is simply convenient in order to further your purposes without any regard for truth, that in principle is condemnatory, right, George? I mean, we can agree that I would agree with you, that in principle is something that we ought to reject, and no human being who is made for the truth ought to do that, okay? So you have an individual who gets it wrong, perhaps in that regard, but maybe gets it right in other areas. And so our duty and our job is to assess that and to analyze that and to weigh these areas of what is being said, whether it's concerning life and freedom or concerning these other things, and to weigh these things to see what is most important. And of course, we know that we cannot have any pursuit of happiness. We cannot have any liberty unless we first have life. That fundamental and most important issue of preserving the dignity of innocent human beings. And so we have to analyze that. We have to take these things into consideration when we're analyzing whether we're going to support a particular candidate or not. We recognize that a particular candidate is not going to be perfect in all the areas. We recognize that perhaps the candidate might not have a high regard for the truth in some areas, right? But may have a high regard for the truth in other areas that outweigh those that in the areas where he doesn't have a high regard for truth. And so I think we have to take that into consideration when we're thinking about whether or not we're going to support a particular candidate. And I would argue that the life issue is the most important, for without the high regard for the truth of the intrinsic dignity of innocent human life and the attempt to try and preserve that great good, I think that right there, that good, the good of life, outweighs those other areas when we're trying to support a candidate.
The book I mentioned, that philosopher, is Harry Frankfurt from Princeton University. The book is called On BS, but it's spelled all the way out. I don't know how the publisher sold that book, but it came out in 2005. Are we going to put that on the list of books after the show? Oh, yeah, we'll put that on the list. Okay. Carla Broussard, our guest, right back after this.
Catholic Answers Live. We're here for you.
To many people, even many Christians, purgatory is a fantasy, or worse, a wicked lie invented by the church to make salvation complicated and keep people in fear. But I'm here to tell you that purgatory is fact, not fiction. The Bible supports it, Christians have historically believed in it, and it makes theological sense. In my new book, Purgatory is for Real, I provide the evidence and reasoning to help you understand this controversial doctrine and demonstrate how it's actually a joyful, hopeful reality, not something shadowy and mysterious, but a sign of God's love and mercy. To get your copy of Purgatory is for Real, visit shop.catholic.com today or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Did you know you can access Catholic Answers Live right from your phone or other mobile device? Download the Catholic Answers Live app today. The Catholic Answers Live app, available now on iOS and Android.
If you spend any time on Twitter, Facebook, or mainstream media, you're probably familiar with the litany of slogans that skeptics employ to rescue you from the foolish belief that God exists. The constant onslaught seems to leave people with the idea that they have no alternative but to embrace atheism. How can a Christian respond? In One Less God Than You, John DeRosa breaks down 20 of the most common atheist challenges and shows you how to craft effective answers. Atheism is more aggressive and widespread than ever. Read One Less God Than You and prepare yourself to respond with the joyful truth that God is real. To get your copy of One Less God Than You, visit shop.catholic.com today or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
They say pride goes before a fall. That's the topic of our conversation tomorrow on Take Two with Jerry and Debbie on most of these EWTN stations.
Now back to Catholic Answers Live.
Your truth, my truth. That's a CD you can get that Carla made a few years ago, and it's about relativism. So look for that at shop.catholic.com if you want to have a, you know, Carla will go into a great, much more detail than he can here, and you can listen to it over and over again. You can also just get it as an MP3 download also. But you've been thinking about relativism for a long time. This has been something that you have, you didn't just come up with this today. And it's actually been a poison in our culture for a long, long time.
Yeah.
And I think actually many people who are thinking relativistically
relativistic way.
They don't actually know that that's what they're doing. They're just because that's what the culture is putting out there all the time.
Right.
I mean, even on very highbrow programs like the Real Housewives, you get people saying, oh, that's my truth. That's not your truth. That's my truth.
Right.
But this is, we're not saying that this is, you know, we don't like this way of thinking. We're saying that's wrong to think that way. You're going down a path that will not lead to happiness and will not lead to truth.
Right, because truth is real and we were made for that truth, yeah. Right? We're made to, that's the very purpose of the powers that we have, namely the power of the intellect, right? And the will that follows the intellect. We have the intellect to come to know what is real, And we have our will, right? Our freedom to direct our lives in order to behave in a way that's consistent with what is real. That's the essence of sanity, right? Yeah. To live in harmony with reality. And so we're constituted, we're hardwired to know and live in accord with the truth. And so truth is definitely something that's important for us as human beings because we're made for it. And so, as you said, it constitutes authentic human happiness when we come to know it and live in accord with it, right?
Yeah.
Because that's a goal that we're naturally directed toward. And so consequently, it's going to be perfective of our human nature, which constitutes authentic human happiness. And you know, Si, one thing I wanted to point out before we move on to some callers is, you know, earlier I was categorizing those arguments of the mean-spirited arguments, like, right, don't be mean-spirited. And I want to affirm, like, some people have, although they're flawed in their judgments about certain things, about saying a belief is false or behavior is immoral, often it's motivated by a good intention, right? Because, like, some people don't, so the operating moral principle is, don't be mean to people, right? Don't be a jerk to people. And we can affirm that,
yeah,
right?
Right, right.
Like, within, in order to preserve peace and harmony and order within social living as social animals, we don't want to disturb that order unnecessarily, first of all. And secondly, we want to be extending goodwill to other people, right? And so we don't want to be going around being a jerk and being mean and stuff, right? And so that's the operating moral principle that's driving many people who appeal to relativism. Although what the problem is that they perceive my saying that belief is false or that behavior is immoral, they perceive that as being mean-spirited. And so that's where we have to sort of clarify things and saying, no, when I make a judgment that that belief is false, that doesn't entail me being mean-spirited. I'm just saying that opinion doesn't match up with reality.
Yeah.
You wouldn't say I'm being mean-spirited if I go and tell somebody, hey, you believe the earth is flat, guess what? It's not flat. It's spherical, right? It's a sphere. It's round, okay?
You're mean, Carlo.
That's right.
We wouldn't
say that, right?
No.
Or even behavior, right? When we make a judgment that certain behaviors are immoral or we say they're wrong.
Yeah.
That doesn't necessarily entail being mean-spirited.
No.
Because one could make a judgment that behavior is immoral. And what we mean, especially from the Catholic perspective, is that behavior will not lead you to authentic human happiness. It's contrary to what's good for you.
Yeah.
And consequently will not make you truly happy. You might have some pleasure or kinds of happiness here and there, but ultimately speaking, it's not going to make you happy because that's not good for you. And so it's because we've said yes to your good and your human happiness, we're saying no to this behavior. And that's the essence of love, right? To will the good of another. And that's as far as from being mean-spirited as you could possibly get. It's the opposite of being mean-spirited. It is love. Now, can you be a jerk and mean in the way or the mode and the manner in which you say these things?
Yes, I can.
Yeah,
I frequently am.
Yeah. And y'all were talking about this, I think, on the last hour, right? Sometimes
yeah.
we fall short
right.
of that standard, that Christian standard of how we ought to share the truth. But that we ought to share the truth, that's a distinct issue.
Exactly. All right. 888-318-7884. If you believe in relativism, if you believe, for example, the idea that, well, we need to respect everyone's truth and all truths are equal or that kind of thing. Or if you believe, as Carlo said, that it's mean-spirited to say, for example, some things are marriage and some things are not marriage, you're welcome to call 888-318-7884. We go now to Marius in Orangeburg, Pennsylvania. Marius, your question for Carlo.
Yes, good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening, Marius.
Si and Carlo, I believe. First off, I want to say I love EWTN, all the different programmings. It's the only place you can get true news, which I want to correct the last caller that opened up his talk with saying that President says what he feels like when he feels like, just like on the fly, which is not true. The president, I've been finding since May, probably, I'd say sometime in May, has been getting blocked. quite all over the place. I've been telling people, if you want true news, to go to EWTN News 9 to 9:30 at night.
Marius, I'm just afraid you're going to go beyond EWTN and maybe mention a website or something that we don't know. So I'm not trying to be as Carlos says, a jerk to you, but I'm going to leave it at EWTN because we know we can trust EWTN. And let's move on to your question for Carlos.
And the pursuit of the truth is a good thing.
Yeah.
Donald Trump is actually doing, and people don't actually know that he's doing these things because the president is getting blocked. I never thought I'd live to see this in my whole life. I'm 66 years old. But anyhow, getting back to the... I listen in the shower now. My shower radio went bad, so I've hooked up a Bluetooth speaker to the phone, and I love it now.
Okay.
So anyhow, I was kind of 75% listening, but it sounds like Carlos saying that it's a little contradictory to your other programs that, you know, tell you that that abortion is wrong and this and that. So are we not supposed to, like, stand up and, like, for instance, something that just happened, I saw on Facebook, and Facebook right now is something I'm either going to get ready to turn off, or I'm going to tell people and I'm going to be relentless.
I guess I got to say, Mark, just don't do Facebook in the shower. That is extremely unsafe. So I'm going to encourage you not to do that. I got to get Carlo to comment on what you've said so far, though. So hang on a quick sec. Go ahead.
Yeah, so it seems, Cy, as if Marius seems to have heard that we're saying that we ought not to tell people that abortion is wrong, or that we ought not to tell people that their behavior is wrong. And in fact, Marius, that's what relativism would say. And so the topic of the show is refuting arguments in favor of relativism. So what you may have heard earlier is me articulating what someone might say who favors relativism or is trying to establish relativism. What we say, Marius, what we believe as Catholics is that we can and ought to share the truth with others. So there is nothing wrong in principle with making a negative evaluation about somebody's belief concerning reality, right? And saying or identifying an opinion or a belief to be wrong. In other words, it doesn't match up with reality. It doesn't correspond with reality. Or judging a behavior, not the intentions of an individual, because only God has access to that, but judging a behavior to be contrary to our good as human beings, and thus we ought not to do that. So that's our position, Marius, that we're arguing that there is objective truth and that we can share that truth with others. And that is what contrasts or goes against the common cultural ethos that we find ourselves in, right? Where the cultural narrative is, if you do that, if you tell somebody their belief is wrong, false, and that their behavior is immoral, then somehow you are lacking love, you're mean-spirited, right? You're a bigot, you're hateful, you're being judgmental, etc. And so that's sort of the logic that we're challenging or wanting to challenge here on this show.
888-318-7884, the number, if you'd like to get in on our conversation about relativism, especially refuting arguments in favor of relativism, whether you yourself are in favor of relativism, as Carlo has presented, or whether you'd like some help being able to answer those in your life who present relativistic arguments, 888-318-7884, the number. The spelled version is 888-31 Truth. Carlo's book, Purgatory is for Real, as I was saying earlier. Purgatory is for
there
real.
There you go, brother. You got it now.
It is just about to be out. I got a note here from Carrie that it's going to the printer this week. So you're going to get 25% off if you use the promo code REAL when you go pre-order the book at shop.catholic.com. And I guess what Carrie's saying is you won't have very long to wait because it's going to be out very, very shortly. So head over to shop.catholic.com and get 25% off by using the promo code REAL. Did you actually, in the writing of this, did you actually learn anything about purgatory where you're like, you know, that's very well said the way this person that you studied said it, or that was a detail about it that maybe you weren't so clear on before?
Sure. Yeah, there were several things that came to light through my research in the book. One thing was realizing just how many Protestants actually affirm least some aspects of purgatory. It's not they don't affirm the full doctrine of purgatory as found and enshrined in magisterial teaching, but they do affirm some aspects, especially in the academic literature, like in the journals and stuff. You do have quite a few Protestants affirming some aspects of it. So it's not totally a Catholic Protestant dividing.
That's really
thing,
good
right?
to know.
And that's
yeah.
one of the things I point out. It's one of the chapters in my book, in fact. So one of the sections is purgatory in other religious traditions. So I have a chapter looking at non-Christian religious traditions and how there is room in their thinking for aspects of purgatory. Like, you see this general idea of a post-mortem temporary suffering on account of wrongdoing. It's kind of across the board. And even among non-Catholic Christian believers, you find aspects of purgatory. But that particular element that our Protestant brothers and sisters sort of across the board deny, although Leibniz, you know, the German philosopher, he affirmed this aspect, and that is namely discharging the debt of temporal punishment for past sins. So Leibniz actually argued for that and affirmed that. Whereas most Protestants will affirm some sort of sanctifying aspect, like you got to get the guilt of sin cleaned off, unhealthy attachments got to be purified. But they do have an allergy
to the word purgatory.
To the debt of temporal punishment due for sin. And I understand where they're coming from, because given their presupposed principles and doctrines and what they believe about justification and how we are justified, I can see why they make that rejection, why they reject that aspect.
It fits with what the other things that they teach about the Christian
life. And so I touch on that in my book and give you ways in which you can explain that aspect of purgatory and ground it biblically even.
888-318-7884 is the number. We'll try our best to get you on with Carlo when we come back right after this. If you're in the shower, don't be doing Facebook.
You're listening to Catholic Answers Live. Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects homebuyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
Don't you feel sometimes like there's so many people in the world, how does he hear your prayer? Never think of that, huh? Everybody thinks of that. I'm only a little grain of sand on the seashore. Oh, but that's not true. See, God is God. And you and I have to let God be God. I don't know how he does it. He's God.
For more information on Mother Angelica, visit Religious Catalog at ewtnrc.com.
A lot of people think that street evangelization involves yelling out of a bullhorn telling people that they're going to hell. Not so with St. Paul's Street Evangelization. Our methods are non-confrontational and effective. We simply offer information on the Catholic faith, along with rosaries, miraculous medals, and prayer. Pope Francis wrote about how beautiful it is to see street preachers joyfully bringing Jesus to every corner of the earth. Street evangelization is fun and fruitful. Join us today at streetevangelization.com.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Okay, like 1,000 people call right now. Like, do you all understand the time-space continuum? You have a whole hour, and now you're calling. All right, let's go to Jim.
See what we can do, right?
Yeah, we'll do our best. Jim in Rapid City, South Dakota, listening on the great, the wonderful Real Presence Radio. You are up next, Jim. Your question for Carlo.
Hi, Si. Hi, Carlo.
Hey.
I noticed that a lot of people, when presenting arguments, especially relativistic arguments, will use the term, I feel that.
Right.
So that it becomes an emotional response as opposed to a fact-based response.
Yeah.
Just wondering how to approach a response when it becomes a personal, this is how I feel, so it's emotional-based, versus providing a fact-based argument.
Yeah, so a couple of thoughts come to mind, Jim. You could, first of all, you could respond and say, okay, I understand that that's how you feel, but what are the implications of that? Like, what's the purpose of the assertion? Do you intend to imply something from your feeling? Like, are you implying that I should feel the same as you? Well, if you say I should feel the same as you, well, then seems to be implied within that is that there's some claim to objective reality. Like, I ought to be thinking like you. I ought to be behaving like you because the way you're thinking and behaving comports and corresponds to reality, right? But if it's just merely an assertion, like, I feel this, well, then all that really calls for, Jim, is a counter assertion and say, well, I don't feel that. And so what's the point, right? And so it could serve to be sort of a stalemate there. Like, it could be an impasse to where the conversation could go no further because you're simply stating, I feel this, and I'm stating, I don't feel that. And so we're going to have to ask, all right, do we go further? What are the implications here, right? Now, my second thought is getting back to kind of what I hinted at first is that whenever somebody says, I feel like this or whatever, and an appeal to their feelings, I think that's sort of common parlance for my opinion is, right? I think that's what's going on often. And so we could simply respond and say, okay, well, just change the terminology. That's your opinion. You're stating your belief, your opinion. That's what you feel. That's what you're thinking. So now the question is, does that opinion correspond to reality? Is that opinion true? I understand this is your opinion, okay? But what we're really interested in, does that opinion correspond to reality? Now, they might say, well, there is no reality for our opinions to correspond to, and then they're bona fide relativists there, right?
Right, at least for the moment they are.
And and then we're going to have to get back to the basics of establishing that there is objective truth. But I think often what's going on here, Jim, if we sort of sift through the smoke here a little bit and get behind the statement, they're simply stating an opinion. And then we ask, is that opinion true? And therein the debate, there's where the debate lies, right? To try and assess that stated opinion to see whether it's true or false. What do you think of that, Jim?
You know what? I think we dropped Jim, actually.
Oh,
and
okay.
I hope I wasn't the one who did it, but I apologize for that, Jim. Thank you for the question. Carlo Broussard, our guest, and we're talking about kind of relativism from the point of view of the arguments in favor of relativism. Can they be refuted? Yes, they can. And that's what Carlo is trying to help us do today, refute arguments in favor of relativism. If you have a question about that, 888-318-7884. Better go to Stanley right now in Connecticut. Stanley, you there with us?
I'm on.
Hi,
yes,
Stanley.
I am.
Okay, go ahead.
Hi. So I have a question. I'm a faithful Catholic, and I, of course, my opinions and the facts on, on abortion, I stand with what the Church says.
Right.
I'm just, whenever I make that assertion to people who don't share my views,
right,
they come at me with things like, oh, well, what if it was a loved one of yours that was raped? Or what if
right.
you had a situation where, you know, where like the baby was very, very ill?
Right.
Or, you know, so what I'm getting at is, because, you know, I'm blessed. I have beautiful, healthy kids.
Right.
So, you know, so people kind of look at me and they say, well, you've never had to deal with this situation.
Right.
And even though it doesn't shake my faith and doesn't shake yeah. my belief of what abortion is, I guess I'm looking for ways that I can kind of counter their arguments.
Okay.
Right.
To be more convincing.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, Stanley, I think you just hit the nail on the head there towards the end when you said it doesn't take away from what abortion is. And I think you're spot on there because notice these sorts of arguments or statements, they're all appealing to things that are irrelevant to the nature of the action being performed and the reality of what the being is in the womb of the mother, namely an innocent human being, right? And how we ought to relate to innocent human beings. So yes, maybe I've never experienced or been in this situation with a loved one, but that thought experiment, like what if? Well, all we can say in response to that is, yeah, it would be hard. It would be traumatic. But the hardship and the trauma that's involved in a situation where I might be involved in, that in no way bears on the truth of the matter concerning the nature, once again, the nature of the being in the womb of the mother, namely an innocent, a human being, and that this human being is an innocent human being, and that we ought never to kill an innocent human being. And so, therefore, it would be immoral to kill this innocent human being in a mother's womb. And so notice how it's a distraction there. They're appealing to things that in no way bear upon the reality or the fact of the matter of what is the action being performed, who is the action being performed on, right? And so I think that's one way in which I would respond. What do you think there, Stanley?
I like that. I mean, maybe I've thought of it.
Right.
Along those lines, but I've never put it together like you just did. So thank you.
Yeah, I would encourage you to get a hold to my colleague and good friend's book, Trent Horn's book, Persuasive Pro-Life. And he does a great job of teaching you how to respond to arguments like these and a variety of other arguments within the pro-life debate and defending the lives of the unborn.
I mean, when it comes down to it, the opinions of others don't matter to me, but at the same time, I know as Catholics, we're kind of called to evangelize, so I want to find ways that I can actually reach them instead of just completely turning them off.
God bless you, brother.
And you notice, Stanley, in that approach, what we can do is affirm, right? We want to affirm what they're appealing to. So like the person who is making this argument is like, you know, it's a really hard and traumatic situation. And the implication is that if you were in that traumatic situation, maybe you wouldn't be able to stand up for the truth and do what you think is true. And perhaps that may be the case. I can't presume that I'm going to be able to stand up for the truth in a traumatic situation. I hope I would. But notice how that in no way bears upon the truth of the matter.
Amen.
And how I ought to relate to that real situation.
Thanks, Stanley. Let's see if we can get Marcus and Marquette on next. Marcus, you're going to have to be quick with your question.
Okay, yeah, sure. I know that the church has usually taught that lying is always wrong, but I was thinking in an old classical situation where you had a Nazi guard pounding at the door and wanting to know if you were hiding people that they were looking for, innocent people.
All right, let's let Carlo. I will let Carlo get to that one. I'm just going to say this before he answers. Don't give up Anne Frank. Okay, go ahead.
All right, Marcus. Very good question here. And brother, this is a loaded question, all right? Because first of all, if the question is, can we ever do something intrinsically evil for some good intention, some good end? The answer is no. We ought never to engage in an activity that is intrinsically evil, regardless of the circumstances or what our intention is, okay? So I take the position that lying is intrinsically evil regardless of circumstances. So I would judge that one ought never to lie, regardless of how big or small that lie is, in order to bring about some greater good, because I would be a willing and intrinsic evil. Now, that's distinct from one's culpability, right? Of engaging in the intrinsically evil act. So, Marcus, you brought up the situation of the Nazi coming knocking on the door. My judgment, through my philosophical training, I've come to the conclusion that one ought not to lie in that situation. In order to save lives, you should employ some other means like mental reservation, right? And that's a whole topic of conversation. But my judgment is that you ought not to lie in this situation to bring about the greater good of saving people's lives. However, it's important to distinguish that from the culpability, right? So given the circumstances, if one does engage in the lie and perform an act of lying, their culpability for engaging in that intrinsically evil action would be really low. So yeah. I want to make those qualifications there. But at the bottom line is one ought never to do evil in order to bring about a greater good.
However, I never disagree with Carlo, and I'm not disagreeing now because it's not what he's saying, but don't give up Anne Frank, all right? You got to protect her. Carlo.
More than one way to protect.
Yeah, sure. That's right. Exactly. Right.
And you don't have to do evil to protect.
No. Exactly. That's exactly right. And even if you did, it won't do you any good because you're not supposed to do evil.
Amen.
To bring about good. Carlo, thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Si.
We haven't done the relativism for a long time. It's fun to do it again.
It was fun. Thank you for that.
Look for Carlo's new book coming out very, very soon. Purgatory is for Real. We'll see you tomorrow right here, God willing, on Catholic Answers Live.